Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, November 17, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Here are our top stories this evening.
First Lady Grace Mugabe urges her husband, President Robert Mugabe, to fire his deputy, Joyce Mujuru, immediately after she was fingered in an alleged plot to assassinate the head of state.
There shouldn't be public prosecution of individuals. Prosecution should be done through the law court, through the police, and not by individuals.
Meanwhile, Deputy President Joyce Mujuru breaks her silence on heightened ZANU-PF factionalism and dismisses as malicious reports that she is corrupt, incompetent, and attempting to overthrow President Robert Mugabe.
When she finds herself defending against both the media and her counterparts in the political process, you would simply say she has lost the game, she's lost the gamble.
And Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition Chairman Dewa Mafinga resigns his position today, citing deep mistrust and infighting that he says had become untenable for effective leadership.
First Lady Grace Mugabe today urged her husband, President Robert Mugabe, to fire his deputy, Joyce Mujuru, who has been fingered in a plot to assassinate the head of state. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Addressing some university students and ZANU-PF supporters at her Mazoe orphanage today, First Lady Grace Mugabe said Mr. Mugabe should now take action and dismiss his deputy after reports fingered her in a plot to assassinate the veteran president. The First Lady has on numerous occasions accused Mrs. Mujuru of corruption, incompetence, and selling out to the country's so-called detractors. Following a report carried in the Sunday Mail newspaper yesterday linking Mrs. Mujuru to a plot to assassinate the president, Mrs. Mugabe also stunned those who attended today's meeting that she has video evidence of Mrs. Mujuru also plotting to eliminate her, adding that the vice president was working with unnamed foreign countries to implement those plots. She added that Mrs. Mujuru should now face treason charges. Mrs. Mugabe said, since Vice President Mujuru was appointed 10 years ago, she has not been working in the interests of women. She added that the person who would be elected at the forthcoming ZANU-PF Congress to replace Mrs. Mujuru and other ministers should work hard or risk facing the same fate that is about to be faced by Mujuru. Studio 7 contacted Vice President Mujuru for comment, but she said she could not speak since she was in a meeting. But she released a statement yesterday dismissing claims that she is corrupt. In her statement, Mrs. Mujuru said her hands are clean and she was determined to continue to work for the good of the country. On personal attacks that were launched against her by the First Lady and other ZANU-PF officials, Mrs. Mujuru said she had instructed her lawyers to deal with the matter. Meanwhile, the president of the ZANU-PF Aligned Zimbabwe Congress of Students, Leopold Chakanyuka, also told the gathering that Higher Education Minister Olivia Muchena and Youth Minister Francis Nema should also resign immediately for allegedly not advancing issues that have a bearing on the lives of youth and students. The ZICOSU president also called for Mrs. Mujuru to resign within a fortnight, while Mrs. Mugabe warned that those who continue to align themselves with Mrs. Mujuru will be punished. Factionalism has become more pronounced in ZANU-PF this year as the ruling party heads for its sixth crucial elective congress. Reporting for Studio 7 from Mazoe, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
As reported by Thomas Chiripasi, Deputy President Joyce Mujuru has broken her silence on heightened ZANU-PF factionalism by dismissing as malicious reports that she is corrupt, incompetent, and attempting to overthrow President Robert Mugabe. In a statement released yesterday evening, Mrs. Mujuru said no amount of malicious, hateful, and false statements about her her family and business associates can deter her from the mission at hand, that is to assist President Mugabe in driving the social and economic programs of the government to successful fruition. The vice president, who has been urged to step down by the First Lady Grace Mugabe and her allies ahead of the party's elective congress in December, said she has briefed her legal practitioners to take the necessary steps at law to restore her good reputation, political standing, and dignity.
The beleaguered vice president said she is ready to defend herself before ZANU-PF and in any court of law on any of the allegations made against her at any time in accordance with the laws of Zimbabwe. Mrs. Mujuru said she will continue to diligently serve the people of Zimbabwe and ZANU-PF. Reacting to a statement, ZANU-PF Central Committee member David Ndlovu told Studio 7's Gibbs Duwe that Mrs. Mujuru has the right to defend herself.
An individual is innocent until proven guilty. And my belief is that there shouldn't be public prosecution of individuals. Prosecution should be done through the law courts, through the police, and not by individuals.
So in this case, are you assuming that at the end of the day, she's being prosecuted in public by some party members for their own personal gain?
Yeah, because the legal system is here. And when an individual has done something wrong, the due legal process should be followed.
So now, looking at what is going on in ZANU-PF, do you think that the party will still be there before the Congress, or maybe you're going to see some factions splitting from the main party?
No, the party will still be there, because my idea is that some people come to their senses and correct what they are doing. The party will still be there. As we grow closer to the Congress, some people might start having good reasoning and see that what is being done or what is happening is not good for the party and for the future, not only the party, the future of this country.
That was ZANU-PF Central Committee member David Ndlovu speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
Independent political analyst Charles Mutasa tells Studio 7's reporter Jonga Kantemiri that although Mujuru has taken long to break the silence, she has done the right thing to at least give her side of the story.
I think at this point in time, it was important for her to come out in the open and tell the nation what is her position concerning the allegations that have been leveled against her. I think people may say silence is golden, but to a certain extent it is. But when it goes beyond a certain duration, one has to speak out and say a mind. And I think the reason why she's doing that is she has actually seen that there's no one coming to speak on her behalf. I think she originally thought that the president will come and defend her, but that is not what has happened, so she has to speak for herself.
Some would argue that just issuing a statement does not carry enough weight. What's your reaction to this?
I think she has fewer options, if none, except to speak her mind, because even if she remains silent, people will just act on her, just like happening on to other people within the party at the moment. So I think it is wise for her to speak her mind and let the nation know what she thinks and where she stands.
That was independent political analyst Charles Mutasa in Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
A political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University tells Studio 7's Gibbs Duwe that Mrs. Mujuru should start courting her opponents in order to survive the political onslaught launched by her opponents.
Well, she finds herself defending against both the media and her counterparts in the political process, you would simply say she has lost the game, she's lost the gamble. And to then say that the allegations are unfounded is, in political terms, necessarily showing that she's on the defensive and not on the offensive, and therefore has lost the game. She must be giving a statement now, trying to court or create a courtship between herself and the other side. And as long as she's not doing that, she is continuing to lose greatly. She needs some good political advice at this stage, which she seems not to have.
And do you think that she would survive before the Congress?
she would not survive, which is why I'm very disappointed that at this moment she is not beginning a process of courtship between herself and the other side, which is the only way she can survive at the Congress and hope to fight another day. If she doesn't survive at the Congress, her ability or chances of fighting back post-Congress is going to be diminished even further. So therefore, she's squandering a very important opportunity, very important moment, trying to look clean.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University speaking with Studio 7 from London. The other factions say to be fighting for the control of the ZANU-PF party ahead of the party's congress is allegedly led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, who has also denied that he leads a faction.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, you can find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001202-465-0318.
Coming up,
can tobacco cure Ebola? Stay tuned.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
A second woman in Egypt has died of bird flu. The woman who had tended chickens at her home died of the H5N1 virus, the second such fatality in Egypt this year. The European Union is expected to outline steps to contain the highly contagious virus after two poultry farms in Britain and the Netherlands confirmed outbreaks of different strains of the virus.
France says one of its citizens is among the Islamic State militants appearing in a video announcing the beheading of American aid worker Abdul Rahman Kassig. Interior Minister Bernard Chachenevu identified the Frenchman today as 22-year-old Maxime Hachard, who left for Syria more than a year ago after a brief stay in Mauritania.
And China and Australia have signed a declaration of intent on a landmark free trade deal after about a decade of negotiations. Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott and visiting Chinese President Xi Jinping witnessed the signing ceremony today at Parliament in the capital, Canberra.
The Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition CZC Chairman Dewama Vinga resigned his position today, citing deep mistrust and infighting that he said had become untenable for effective leadership. His deputy Samgeliso Kumalo takes over the reins until the organization holds its annual general meeting next year. Mavinga tendered his resignation at a special general council meeting held in Harare. He tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo that he's leaving for personal fights and smear campaigns can cease and allow the organization to refocus and move forward.
Primarily, it is really to secure the best interests of the institution in terms of the need to focus on values of good governance, transparency, and accountability, and to ensure that the institution has those positive values and systems of governance in place. There have been a number of challenges, but I want to step aside to give an opportunity to the leadership and elders of the institution to try and find a way forward that would restore the institution to its founding values. I believe that the mistrust, the lack of sense of purpose, and the lack of a common vision and common value militate against effective leadership, and they've made it untenable for continued effective leadership of the coalition. Therefore, it was the number of things to step aside and let others take it forward.
Do you see your stepping aside ending all the problems that are bedeviling the organization?
It's an important first step where there are conflicted problems and challenges. One thing that might cloud issues are wrong perceptions, that is about personalities or personal interests. So to demonstrate commitment to the institutional values, it is important to take away the personal interest by stepping aside. But this can only work if there is commitment across the board from others that we should put the interest of the institution first and therefore let a clean space and neutral individual, impartial and credible individual craft a way forward that would rescue the institution and restore its credibility and public confidence.
And that was outgoing Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition Chairman Dewa Mavinga on the line from Harare.
Crisis spokesman Fundo Mlilo says he hopes Mavinga's departure will allow for a new start.
This is a welcome development considering the challenges that the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition has been facing. The members of Crisis had called for a special general meeting, which was held today to discuss the intermittent challenges that the organization has been facing. So as part of the meeting, Mr. Mavinga attended this meeting and tendered his resignation.
What does Mr. Mavinga's departure mean for the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition?
In our view, we think that this is the beginning of a process to re-stabilize the organization, to put the organization on its proper agenda of strategic fights for democracy and good governance in Zimbabwe. We believe that our organization had sidetracked and was now focusing on internal issues. So the departure by Mr. Mavinga will allow the organization to have a frank discussion and a frank strategic plan going forward without having to focus on leadership issues.
That was Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition spokesman Fundo Mlilo on the line with reporter Ntunga Milingomo in Harare.
Tobacco has been implicated in the increase in certain cancers, such as in lungs, from smoking. As a result, the worldwide anti-smoking campaigns have put countries like Zimbabwe, a major producer and exporter of tobacco, in a dilemma. But there might be a bright side to the nicotine-rich product after all. Ndimiake Mwakalele speaks with Don Stewart, CEO of the Canadian company Plantform, which is currently testing a new drug to cure Ebola using tobacco as a key ingredient.
The possibility of creating at very low cost drugs for Ebola is an exciting opportunity for us all.
How did tobacco become a possibility as a cure for a disease like Ebola?
It's important to know that the drugs for Ebola that have been made in tobacco are not natural products of tobacco. So the tobacco is actually being used as a little bioreactor. And we introduce the genes into the tobacco that make the drugs for Ebola. And this is really good technology because it can actually be done anywhere in the world because you do it in an indoor facility with lights and some water, a little heating or cooling, and then you've got your production facility.
And can you explain exactly the process?
We grow a type of tobacco that's called Nicotinia benthamiana. It's a relation of smoking tobacco. And it's generally grown indoors for 6 weeks. And then we use what's called an agrobacterium. That's a type of bacteria that only infects plants. And in that agrobacteria, we've introduced the gene that makes the drug product. You make the agrobacterium in such a way that it fools the plant into making the drug.
Now, the irony here is that tobacco has been linked with cancer. How do you get people to see beyond the negative aspects of tobacco?
When we produce a drug, we're actually purifying away all the components of the drug. So we have to show with a lot of testing that the product has no residual containing materials from the tobacco. And what we hope is that people will see beyond the downside of tobacco and see this as a positive use of the crop and an alternative process that a farmer could become involved in.
Don Stewart is the CEO of Plantform, a Canadian company that is testing a cure for Ebola, which uses tobacco as a key ingredient. He spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele from Gulf, Canada.
Members of the Gwanda Residents Association, among others, were today arrested by the police after attempting to carry out their planned water demonstrations in the town. Gwanda Residents Association spokesman Begezela Matuma tells Studio 7 there was a major police presence in the town today following the association's announcement on intending to protest. Reporter Tatenda Kombo spoke with Gwanda Residents Association spokesman Begezela Matuma, who says others continue to be arrested over demonstrations.
There was general confusion around the town. Then, because of major intimidation, the demonstration just couldn't go ahead.
How many people were arrested? As you say that a few, including yourself, were arrested.
Yeah, I was picked up by the law and order section. It was an hour or two of interrogation before I was allowed to go and told to come back after an hour. I told to go and get the constitution of the resident association and the list of members in the resident association. We did believe that to them, but I couldn't get the whole list of members of the resident association. It was already in the constitution an hour. Our secretary was not around. But I didn't understand why that list was needed. So that we are giving the constitution and the committee member and the committee member. One guy I understand was also picked up, but we haven't given any state what he's in touch with. Manager for Fanda, I understand he was also picked up by the police for something like violating a court order. I said Zuma should not say he said the water cut. So we understand he's in police custody right now.
Gwanda Residents Association spokesman Begezela Matuma. The National AIDS Council says it is happy with preparations to mark the International AIDS Day on December 1st. The African Union this year will mark the day in Zimbabwe, a move National AIDS Council spokeswoman Madeleine Dube says will strengthen their message on fighting new infections in the country and on the continent at large. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye spoke with Madeleine Dube on the issue.
Zimbabwe is fortunate that this year we will host the Continental World AIDS Day, team running, getting to zero in Africa, your responsibility, my responsibility. And we're hoping that we will be able to commemorate this event on the 1st of December in Victoria Falls.
Why Victoria Falls?
Zimbabwe is fortunate to have one of those seven wonders of the world, that is Victoria Falls. So we'd like to market Zimbabwe at the same time as we do our commemoration.
We understand that this year's meeting, you will be hosting some countries from Africa under the umbrella of the African Union. Tell us a little bit about that.
In 2012, the Africa Union Commission decided that they'll do commemorations in the member states, in the AU member states. So the first commemoration of World AIDS Day was done in Rwanda in 2012. 2013, they then went to South Sudan, and this year they decided to come to Zimbabwe. We are delighted in Zimbabwe because we think we can tell our stories, an opportunity for us to tell our story in the different fronts.
What is the Zimbabwean story?
We are the first country in Southern Africa to ensure that we have reduced the infection of HIV and AIDS. And our prevalence rate has gone down as compared to what it was in 1999. It was as high as 33 and it went down to 25%. Then we ended up at 14%.
And that was the National AIDS Council spokeswoman Madeleine Dube speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye in Harare.
The MDCT faction, calling itself the Renewal Team, has reiterated that all efforts being made by the MDCT to withdraw 15 of its members from Parliament and 3 from the Senate will not be successful until a court of law determines which faction is legitimate. The MDCT says it will approach the Constitutional Court because the Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Mudenda, and President of the Senate, Edna Matsongwe, did not correctly interpret the provisions of the Constitution when rejecting the MDCT's demands last week. However, the renewal team's Bulawayo provincial chairman and legal expert Kucaca Phulu says the importance of obtaining a court's ruling on the legitimacy of either of the factions cannot be overlooked.
Because we have, on one hand, ourselves contending that, we dismissed Morgan Tsvangirai and other leaders who have shown disrespect for the constitution of the party. So on the other hand, you've got Morgan Tsvangirai and his group contending that they are the real MTC. All the speaker is saying, and remember, I think the speaker is putting on his hat as a lawyer. He's saying, look, do I have the capacity and the jurisdiction to decide the issues of who is the real MTC? And he's saying, no, that is an issue that must be decided by a court, and therefore go to court. Once the court decides who is the legitimate MTC, then I'll listen to that legitimate MTC. The fact that they held their Congress is neither here nor there, because an illegal cabal can go under a tree anyway and hold a Congress. That does not legitimize them.
What is likely to happen if the MTCT appeals at the Constitutional Court?
That approach is flawed, because the same interpretation will give either of them a right. And who should get that right? That is the question. No matter what the Constitutional Court were to decide, the provision means, the decision is to be made on who should benefit or who is the rightful MTC. That is a question that cannot be avoided.
That was Kucaca Phulu, the renewal team's provincial chairman for Bulawayo and legal expert on the line from Bulawayo.
And in sports news, FC Platinum have controversially booked their place in the CAF Confederation Cup tournament. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us how.
Harare City were on the verge of winning the 2014 Chibuku Super Cup and a place in the CAF Confederation Cup until the 94th minute, when referee Nomo Matemera signaled for a goal. Many in the stadium, including Harare City coach Masibadi Nyero, felt the ball did not cross the line, adding that the Sunshine City boys were robbed of a trophy what looked like theirs for the taking. Dinero has no kind words for the match officials.
Because of the bad officiating, that's why it demoralized my players. It was not a fair referee.
Despite protests from the Harare City players and their fans from the stands, the referee stood his ground, and extra time did not produce a winner until the penalty shootouts. Dinero believes his players were denied a season end of celebration.
It's a Christmas present for them.
However, FC Platinum coach Nomen Mapeza says they were aware that the game could spill into the dreaded penalties.
We did penalties yesterday. We practiced everything yesterday. And when I just told them, look, it's you and you are going to take the penalties, they didn't have any problems.
This is Nomen Mapeza's second trophy of the season and FC Platinum's third of the year. Previously, Mapeza won the Zimbabwe National Army Challenge, while the Independence Trophy was won under the guidance of Lloyd Mutasa. For winning the Chibuku Super Cup, FC Platinum took home 75,000, while Harare City were rewarded with $50,000. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about worsening ZANU-PF factionalism as Deputy President Joyce Mujuru speaks out.
To join the discussion, text us at 001202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
The First Lady Grace Mugabe urges her husband, President Robert Mugabe, to fire his deputy, Joyce Mujuru, immediately after she was fingered in an alleged plot to assassinate the head of state.
This is Joyce Mujuru breaks her silence on heightened ZANU-PF factionalism and dismissed as malicious reports that she is corrupt, incompetent, and attempting to overthrow President Robert Mugabe.
That's all we have for you today. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.